On the show today, we have OneSpan's Will Asala returning to the show and talking about how remote banking is here to stay and the four technologies that are driving this innovation and security. So check it out. Guess who's back? OneSpan's very own Will Asala, always talking about security, cybersecurity, all sorts of really cool stuff out there that you guys are working on for credit unions. So we always appreciate the work that you do and always appreciate these visits because they're always an education. So we always appreciate that. So thank you. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me back. I'm excited to be back. And I love talking with you. Love talking with your audience about, you know, what we can do and what security things are coming and how we can help with that. So absolutely.
Indeed. All right. And today's topic, we're talking about remote banking is here to stay and the four technologies that are driving innovation and security. But I want to ask the most obvious question. And I think we all know the answer, Will, but I just enjoy getting your take on these things. So why is remote banking here to stay? What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, remote banking and mobile banking, I think we see a bunch of things here. So I think first and foremost, some of the stuff that we see. I think there's a statistic out there that says there's about 169 million Americans that are using mobile banking today. Mm-hmm. I think that came from IBM. That's a huge number of users. And the big problem with that is that, you know, first off, mobile's great. We love mobile. It's easy to use. You can kind of get into it. And really, you know, with the technologies that the banks are rolling out, you can do quite a bit on there, right? So they've really opened up the trench coat and let you in to kind of, you know, work with a lot of their technologies.
Yeah.
But at the same time, hackers are out there really, you know, battling down and doubling up on their efforts. I think we're seeing a statistics right now about 23% of all cyber attacks are based on financial institutions. That's almost a quarter of all cyber attacks are on financial institutions.
Wow. That's a big focus.
Exactly. It's just a major point, you know, and these attacks we see constantly in the news, right? We're always seeing something new in the attacks. The big banks kind of bear the brunt of that, but our credit unions and our smaller banks, you know, really, as we start to move into the mobile world, and they're full force into the mobile world at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Those attacks are trickling down, and so they kind of cut their teeth on the big banks, and they move into these little banks and these credit unions to use those same attacks. And so we need to really look at some of these technologies to really protect. You know, if the big banks are using them, maybe we can use those with the little banks too. And you know, a lot of those things that we're aiming for. They're pretty straightforward, and I think we've talked about a couple of them here and there. But you know, things like app shielding, mobile app shielding, and I'll kind of list them all. So kind of mobile app shielding, maybe some AI data aggregation, so we can actually take a look at artificial intelligence around it. We're looking at self-sovereign identity, and I think there was a big thing in Europe about that just recently. Yeah. So and then also digital identity verification. Those are some of the easy things and some of the things that I think most of our banks are really starting to put in place to protect themselves. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because I was thinking as you're talking, I'm thinking that, you were talking about the bigger banks that are kind of bearing the brunt of it right now or have been. But now the hackers are starting to go to the smaller banks and the credit unions. And those institutions may not have the sophisticated level of security. And so and we all know that the hackers or the fraudsters are going to the least path of resistance. That's their mantra, I think. So that's what we're dealing with here, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the times we're still using technologies like SMS. So if we're using SMS, right? And so hopefully you're doing something more than SMS authentication to protect your users and what have you, and really moving and graduating into some of these newer technologies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a technology like app shielding, that's kind of a great technology out of the gate.
Yeah, tell us about that.
It's very easy to use. App shielding kind of takes an application and hardens it on the mobile device.
Okay.
So when you put it out on a download place, it's already pre-hardened. Okay. So if I'm an attacker and I go and download an app shielded app, mm-hmm. it's already protecting itself. So it makes it so hackers can't put, you know, attacks over the top of your application. It protects it as it loads itself onto the device. So if someone tries to put a Trojan into your mobile application or a virus into your mobile application, it protects all of that. And, you know, it does it standalone. So it's not like something that the bank has to, you know, be actively pursuing. Once you shield it, you publish it just like you normally would a normal application, and it protects itself. So it's an easy technology. It really helps in this battle of, you know, of the hackers. So
yeah, and if it's an easy technology to implement, so to speak, then it would be easy for the smaller banks and the credit unions to implement as well to protect themselves. So that's a good thing.
Exactly.
So tell us about the AI-powered bank. I mean, talk about the AI-powered banks enhancing data aggregations. This one sounds super interesting as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all these technologies are easy in the end run. So hopefully, you know, as you kind of take a look at some of these technologies and where they go, but AI powered technology, another great offering. And I think you're seeing that this has kind of been a long time coming. So banks are really starting to get a lot of data from a lot of different points. So your mobile device is a handheld computer. It has a ton of data points in there, a ton of contextual data, a ton of just regular data that's in there. And mm-hmm. being able to analyze that data quickly in real time is the name of the game, right? So how do we get all of that data? How do we examine it? And how do we pick up patterns of attacks, right? So I had an incident yesterday where, you know, I was picking up some food and it happened to charge to a place in California when I'm in New Hampshire. Oh, and so my bank immediately said, hey, no, that's probably not a good thing, but that's all done by AI, right? So okay. It looks at me and says, oh, hey, this is a unusual context. And I was doing it on my mobile, in my mobile application. And the bank immediately picked that up and flagged that as, hey, that's not allowed. You know, that's where AI and pulling all of this data. So that was, you know, a payment type mm-hmm. application.
Okay.
There are other, you know, other applications that the banks have. I combine all of that data in one. I have a ton of data. And a human is just not going to pick up those patterns. And that's really right. Where your AI really shines. So.
And I just want to be clear, Will, that wasn't me, okay? Because I'm out in San Diego, you're in New Hampshire. So it wasn't me, okay?
It was definitely very interesting. I couldn't understand why am I paying for this place right in front of me?
Right.
And it was stopping my payment. And I was
my gosh, how bizarre. Now, the last two, 3 and 4, blockchain-enabled self-sovereign identities and the digital identity verification, they kind of complement each other, right? Because I am fascinated with digital identity and the usage. I mean, this is kind of like sky's the limit type of usage for this type of stuff. But can you explain these two real quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think the self-sovereign identity, that's where you basically bring your identity to your bank. So you are your identity. And right. So you control all access to that. You can control who has access to that. You can control how long they have access to that. That's really the whole point of self-sovereign identity, right? Using blockchain, we can make certain that we trust that identity, mm-hmm. okay? Because now blockchain kind of walls off how that identity, you know, who has access to that information and what levels of trust are in place for that information. Mm-hmm. And so really self-sovereign identity is something that I think we still have a long way to go on it. But it is something that, you know, eventually all of these breaches that we have where we're leaking all this personal data and, you know, and everybody has all of this personal data and you're not really sure who has access to what or really who's sharing what. This self-sovereign really starts to fix this problem and brings another level to your application. This is one of the tougher nuts to crack. But I think you're starting to see some major movements in how this goes together. And
something keep an eye on this for sure. Tell me about the digital identity verification as well. Because I think, again, this complements what you just talked about with the cell phone.
Exactly. And your digital identity verification is that front door, right? So if you want to trust that self-sovereign identity, or you want to trust who's accessing the mobile app, or you want to trust the data that you're getting, the front door at checking who that user is, starting off the whole relationship with a trusted digital identity is really where this all gets together. So when you're looking at ID verification, there are all kinds of KYC stuff that we go through. A lot of that is very antiquated, right? So how long did I own my house? What street did I live on when I grew up? Those Q&A things, those are really antiquated ways of getting data. Today, we can make it a lot easier for our users. So we can do things like check your government-issued identity. So you take your driver's license or your passport. We can scan that driver's license or passport, kind of match that up with your face. So take a selfie or facial recognition, say, okay, well, that's your face and the component of that. And then compare and make certain that first off that the face was a live person, is that sitting behind the camera? Is that the person that it is? And then does that face match what was on the passport or driver's license? And does that all that information match what I expected it to match, And so really proving that identity of the person applying for or starting that that transaction with you. It's really a powerful technology and really starts the whole trusted relationship off in a very good foot.
Yeah, that's why I'm so fascinated by that technology alone, because the usage of that is just so versatile. I mean, you can use that in so many areas, and just, I think that's going to explode here in the next, few years for sure. So I want to get to the significance of all of these technologies that are driving remote banking, and it's going to be here to stay. So what's the significance? Because based on what you talk about, these are simple to implement. They're already out there. And they're really hard to crack, like you said. So that sounds like a really great recipe to protect yourself, right? Is that kind of the significance here?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right, you have all of these different things that you're doing within the environment, within how you're trying to protect your users, and sometimes as I'd say 2 years ago, we were skipping some of those steps. Maybe we were looking at things, we can force them into a branch office to go and compare something, or we can see them in person and, shake their hand. Today's day and age, that's not happening. For COVID, for just in general digital stuff, you're just not seeing that anymore. So the adoption of mobile was eventual anyways, and now it's exploded. And as it explodes, you really have to protect those users and protect yourselves, protect your financial institutions from getting attacked. And so a lot of these technologies, these protect against the low-hanging fruit. So you have to think that, okay, if all the big banks are starting to do these technologies, have put these in place, I'm the next bank down the pipeline here, right? Mm-hmm. So the hacker is using the same tools because they bought them, and they bought them on the black market, and they paid for them. So they're going to just try and reuse that over and over again to get their return on investment, right? So they're just going to take it, point it at the next bank, off they go, onto the next attack, right? So we don't want to be that next attack. Yeah. We want to make certain that we're applying the right technologies to protect against that. Yeah. So these things really help and really make certain that, if you've got a mobile app out there and you're trying to trust that user and get that user in a secure place, these four technologies really going to make the difference for everything.
Yeah, because this remote technology, the mobile stuff, it's a have to now. I mean, we learned that the last, 12 to 15 months, you have to have this in place or else, you're going to be left in the dust. So, but the other part of it, the other side of the coin is that you got to have the protection there as well if you're going to be using that. So, oh my gosh. All right, Will. Well, another education. Thank you so much. Anything else to wrap up here? Any final words here on this topic? Because it ain't going to go away.
It's not going to go away. I think, I think if banks are shying away from this, if you're thinking, my engineers are saying, hey, we can just do this ourselves, or let's just use what's already built in. Engineers really have to take a look at that, because a lot of our developers out there, they look at Android and iOS and they're like, Google's got this or Apple's got this. I don't have to do anything. That's a really bad security posture to have, right? You really have to take a look at, what you're protecting, what your users really need. And so I would certainly, you know, recommend that they take a look and see what's out there. And again, most of these things are not high reaching. You're not going to need a lot of work to get these things in place. All the other institutes already went through it. So they've kind of burned the bridges and burned the fields and came out and said, here you go.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and make these technologies in place. So.
Yeah. And if you look at the bigger picture, your business is literally on the line. Your reputation is literally on the line if something happens. So why not take that next step or that investment and check these out and implement them? So yeah, it's just, to me, it's a no-brainer. So, but I'm not running a credit union or a bank, but I would think that would be priority one to protect you and your members' information. So
I would agree.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thanks again. Appreciate the time as always. Again, another great education. So yeah, this is fantastic stuff. And always look forward to the next conversation.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. It's always been great. And I look forward to the next one.